Today, we're talking about the importance of good personal relationships in your life as a youth pastor.
Welcome to the Ministry Coach Podcast, where we bring you weekly tips and tactics to help you fast track the growth and health of your ministry. My name is Jeff Lascola, and this is
Kristen Lascola.
And we're coming off of night one of Youth Pastors Summit here in Southern California. By the time this airs, it will be over, but so far we've made it out of one of the 2 days. And pretty darn good.
Yeah, well, it might not be over in your city. So we went to the SoCal one that met at Saddleback Church. Gorgeous.
Yeah, right.
Gorgeous
church. Disneyland.
It is. It's like a resort. I loved it. I've been there before, but not in a while. And today was a beautiful day. So it sparkled. It was wonderful.
I've been there before, but that campus is so big that I don't remember where I was when I was there.
There's lots of layers and levels to it. So we went to the SoCal one, which, like he said, will be over. But if you live in these areas, Dallas, Orlando, Nashville, Chicago, that is where they're going next. They actually have a big spring tour and they're going to be going all over the place.
Yeah, so make sure you check it out.
Pastor Summit.
$15. That's all it was.
That was a steal. We took both my paid staff and made a little afternoon fun thing of it because it's pretty close to us. It's only about an hour away. So it was great. And so we thought tonight, it's like 10 o'clock. We got back, put the kids to bed, fed the dogs. And now we're like, hey, why don't we recap?
Up here, I'm already asleep.
Don't worry. I got you guys. I'm alert. I took my emergency today. So why don't we just recap a little bit of the highlights because maybe you missed it. Some of our listeners actually were there, which was pretty cool. We got to see some people. But if you were not there, here's kind of our big takeaways. So I loved...
This isn't like spoiler alert type thing, is it?
Well, no, because it already happened.
I know, but for everybody who hasn't gone yet.
It could be different speakers. I don't know.
That's true. We only got to see a couple because we had to leave early. But
yeah. So Ben Trueblood, he spoke. He was the second speaker tonight. And he's like, at Lifeway, he's a big deal. I don't know exactly his title, but it's a big deal title.
He's a big deal.
He's a big deal. It's Ben Trueblood. Great guy. I did a conference with him a while ago. And he talked a lot about like... needing to ask for help. And so some of us get a little prideful or embarrassed and we don't want to ask for help. And he went through some of the reasons why, but kind of emphasized this whole point of like, you cannot do ministry alone. And I think we all know that. But here's where it got interesting. It got interesting when he talked about the reason why we might have a hard time recruiting volunteers. He says the number one question that youth pastors always ask is, how can I recruit? How can I recruit? I need help. I need volunteers. And he was saying a good question to ask yourself is, what emphasis do you personally put on community in your own life?
Yeah.
And he's like, that might be the introspection that you need in order to kind of figure out, why is recruitment difficult for me? Like, do I just naturally in my life put a emphasis on community? And I loved that because he kind of got a little vulnerable and personal. And he just talked about how the reason ministry can be a little lonely is because we as youth pastors might not be fostering great personal relationships in our own life. And this really resonated with me. He said, in ministry, it's easy to know a lot of people and have no one know you. So like simultaneously, I bet you guys are like me and that you go to church and just walking, I can't even walk through the hallway because if you make eye contact with people, it's every eye contact is about 5 minutes of conversation.
Right.
So I go down the hallway, simply like to go to the bathroom in between services. And it's like 5, 10, 15, 20. And then the way back, 5, 10, 15, 20. So it's this whole production because we know a lot of people, we see a lot of people, but he's asking this question, does anybody actually know you? And he said that was like a full stop moment for him one time in a counseling session of just the counselor saying, hey, everything you're telling me, do you have anyone in your life that you could tell these things to? Like, yeah. Do you have a friend with enough intimacy that you could share these things with? And I think, you know, the hard thing with pastors, and this what came up in the Q&A, is we don't know how much to share because we could be shooting ourselves in the foot. Because let's be honest, we're not perfect and we all have struggles. And I think we're afraid if I get too real and too vulnerable, people might lose respect for me. And so, you know, his advice was, you know, you need to know when and who to share those things with. And it's probably people outside of your organization.
Yeah.
And you have to make sure they're not like, like they're not in a position like where they answer to you,
right,
or, you know, something like that. And so finding the people that you can be very vulnerable with, you know, that can be a challenge. So Shane Pruitt, he was the other speaker, and he brought up, you know, a good point. He was saying he has a group of friends that like literally don't care who he is.
Yeah.
You know, he's an author and a speaker and a pastor and pretty influential and has a big following, but yet he has these people in his life that they're like, so you're Shane,
right.
You know what I mean? But like people that are at a certain distance from us in our leadership can kind of ooh and ah of like, oh my gosh, it's you.
Right.
Like you're the pastor, like you're in leadership, you're this, you're that. And I think when we feel that, we feel, oh no, I've got to be a certain person to you. Okay, well then is there a different layer of people in your life that are more peers, maybe outside your organization, maybe people you've known for a while, people who don't care about your position that you can be really vulnerable with? I'm lucky in that I do have that. I've had the same group of friends since like fourth grade. We've added a couple along the way, but I mean, I think I've shared this before. They don't really, oh my gosh, Kristen, you're, you know, a youth pastor. Oh, wow. Like they don't look at me like that. They just are like, tell us something weird a kid did. You know, they just like look at it as entertainment value. And then we go on. And I really feel like I can be vulnerable and honest with my struggles and my challenges and things that are hard for me. And I don't get docked leadership points from them because they don't care. I'm Kristen, you know? And so youth pastors need that, even if it's just that one person, or maybe it's like, okay, start out with a counselor and talking to them and unloading in a safe place. And then like, where can you find that person? And so we put it like this. I thought this was very interesting. He said, there's a difference between real friends and deal friends. And he described deal friends as the people that are transactional, meaning like, what can I get from you? What can you get from me? Our relationship has to do with transaction of getting and giving, and that's it. But we never really know each other. And people want you for what you can offer, or you want them for what they can offer. And man, that resonated with me so much. You know, I think because as pastors, people see us as a resource a lot of times of, I'm hurting, I need counsel, or I'm confused, I need help, I'm lonely, I need attention, I'm whatever it might be. I feel like we are the giver in the relationship so many times. But let me ask our listeners and think about this. How much do you ask people at church, like, how are you doing? How was your weekend? How can I pray for you? What's going on in your life? If you're, you know, a youth pastor, you probably ask those questions all the time. Go out of your way. Hey, are you new? Well, hey, let me introduce you to some people. And you're like the emotional caregiver and you're the relational architect and you're giving people the attention and the platform and all of that. And you just give and give and give. Well, okay. And that whole blur of a weekend or a midweek program, how many people asked you how you were doing?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? No hate, no shade on any of them, but it's like, but they don't,
right.
You know, that's not the relationship dynamic. It's you give, you care. And that's what a pastor is. Pastors are shepherds, pastors care. So
kind of be like going to a doctor and then turning the tables and be like, well, how are you feeling?
I know. Today? And so that's why I said no shade, no hate, because that's not, this isn't like a drive-by guilting or something on those people, but what it does shed light on is you can leave completely depleted after a weekend service. So where can you go for that person to be like, hey, how are you? Like, how's your spiritual life? How's your marriage? How are you feeling? You know, whatever it might be, like, where you can just be so real. And, you know, I feel like my friends and I sometimes are a little too real, and it's like, okay, anything goes. And it is cathartic. Mm. I'm going away with them this weekend for one of the girls' birthdays, and we're going to go to a cabin for a couple of nights. And the conversations that happen, it's just cathartic, to where you're like, oh my gosh, it's almost like you're just emotionally just vulnerable in every sense of the word. Like, there's no, you don't have to pretend anything. Mm. And it's the one place where all bets are off. And it's like, say what you need to say, do what you need to do, feel how you need to feel, be as silly as you want, be a, like, nobody cares, and everyone gives each other space to do exactly what they need to do. And it's amazing. And I think that's
sounds like a preschool.
Whatever, a Montessori preschool. We get to do a lot of activities. So I don't think that's necessarily a common scenario, but if you could have that one person, that one friend, he kept pointing to the Proverbs that talk about friendship, and Ecclesiastes, where, you know, it's talking about two are better than one. If, like, they have a better return for their work, if one falls down, the other can help him up. One of the secrets, bottom line, to longevity in youth ministry is having a team around you, mm-hmm. having help, but then going a step deeper and having true friendships.
Yeah.
You know, caring for your whole person is caring for your friendships and the relationships in your life and making time for them. So go find friends. But, you know, friendships are scary sometimes because it does involve a sense of risk. He talked to the guys specifically, and he was saying men have a harder time with this. Like, men don't know at what point in the relationship it is, like, are we there yet? Right. Like, are we just golfing together, or are we actually talking, like, about our lives? Like, and it's harder for men to unload emotionally. So I don't know, what did he offer as the solution to that? Or did he, or was he just stating the obvious?
I think he was stating the obvious, but I think he might've been saying, you know, go ahead and make that, like, have that conversation.
Like, defining, he kept joking, like,
yeah, the DTR.
Define the relationship. Like, what are we, you know? And I don't know what that looks like, but we were kind of debriefing with my staff after, and I was like, well, what if it was just like, you do it, like, you be the vulnerable one and say, hey, like, could you pray for me? This week I blah, 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 or I need this from you or whatever. And I wonder if that is giving permission to say, like, oh,
door.
So we're there, you know? And if it's not reciprocated, maybe that's a,
you just say, just kidding.
Just kidding. I'm perfect.
Didn't mean any of that stuff.
But maybe it does come more naturally to women. Yeah. I don't know. But yeah. And then Shane Pruitt did a really, really good job too. And, you know, he was kind of like the coach of, like, go and get them, guys. Yeah. Like the rah, rah, you can do it. And he just brought up such a good point. He had everybody in the room raise their hand if they had come to know Christ before the age of 13. And it was almost the entire room. Yeah. And then he said, if you came to know him after the age of 30, raise your hand. And it was like nobody. And, well, maybe no one in that room was 30. I don't know, but it was a young crowd. And just like this whole encouragement, and we can kind of wrap up with this, is that our job is of infinite importance, because when, like, these students are hungry, they can handle the gospel, they can handle the truth, they can stand to be challenged, we can raise the bar. And he's like, you know, if they can do algebra, they can handle some theology. Right. Okay, so don't water it down. And that kind of goes along with the curriculum talk we were having a couple weeks ago, where it's like, hey, bring those messages up. Like, I go off the adult curriculum, they can handle it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, really just hosing them with the truth, treating them as the church of the present, because we have our work cut out for us. Like, they are ripe for the picking. Like, there is a harvest, and it's like, we are the pastors that are reaching them in the prime salvation age,
right?
You know, where they are searching for their identity and they're very open to putting that identity into something. And may we be the ones who offer them the truth and they're willing, you know? So he was like, stick to the gospel, you know, don't underestimate the power of the Holy Spirit and the power of the word of God, but just give them the gospel and watch them make these decisions. And, you know, that brings up a really good point. I think this is like almost obvious, but not, is how many opportunities are we giving our students to accept Christ? You know, I think we get in the rut of like, we just teach the lessons over and over. Oh, we're going to teach this week and that this week. And, you know, like a pastor like Craig Groeschel, no matter what he's teaching, he's so good at figuring out the altar call moment at the end of it. And so people have the opportunity to make a decision. Our senior pastor, Chris Brown, would always say, I'd be like, man, why are my students always accepting Jesus when the camp speaker says it? And and then he's like, because I never give an altar call. Yeah. He's like, I like wait for it to happen twice a year at winter camp and summer camp, and then that's it. And he's like, then I had to get really real with myself of like, I've got to give them an opportunity to say yes to Jesus. And I always think about that of like, yeah, it's like everything we teach should make a beeline to the gospel. And if you're making a beeline to the gospel, because every story in the Bible points to the gospel, I think we could, you know, make an argument for that. And if you're going to teach the gospel, then like the salvation message and the decision altar call portion of it can be a part of that too. So right. I don't know, maybe take that away as a challenge of how often am I presenting this as an opportunity? To be honest, that message used to intimidate the heck out of me. It's like, why can I teach the Bible like till I'm blue in the face? I can teach it all day long. I love talking about the Bible. But the second I have to be like, with every eye bowed and every head closed, wait, no, with every, don't look around and we're praying. Like, I feel like it became this like monument, like this big deal, but I love like,
it is a big deal.
It is.
And then I think you put so much weight on the moment that you feel like I better not screw this up. It might just be better if I don't do it at all.
And you also take it as a reflection of your teaching. Oh, like absolutely. How many hands were raised? Right. Does it mean I did a good job or a bad job? You know, like you take it as a reflection of the quality of the message.
Yeah.
And so then it's a little bit scary of like, okay, you're going to grade me right now based on whether you accept Jesus or not, because, oh, maybe if my message was better, they would have, or, you know, it's like we play all these mind games. So we make it bigger than it is. Now, following Jesus is the biggest decision they'll ever make, but I think we need to get really good, like a Craig, just throwing it in there. Like, hey, like this isn't going to be reserved for only special occasions, but you can make a decision today to follow Jesus. You can make a decision next week to follow Jesus. Like, when is it going to be your time? Like, come on. Like, and so presenting people, and sometimes, you know how like they say you need to see an advertisement like 8 times or something before you're even like coherent of it. You know, maybe some people accept Jesus the first time they hear the gospel, like in Jesus Revolution, right? But maybe some people are like, wait, that's interesting. Okay, I'm coming back next week.
Yeah.
Okay, well, so if you offer it every week.
Right. And if you're not giving them an opportunity, they may not know, like, okay, I like everything you have to say. I don't
what do I do
the,
with
right,
it?
I don't know what the next step is. Or that's why sometimes I think the camp experience where, yeah, it's like that kid's been coming for like, you know, 8 months.
Yeah. What? And you're like,
and he's been
Christian,
solid this whole time.
But it's like, maybe not.
But well, I'm just thinking, did you never just give him the opportunity? It's like, oh yeah, he may have thought like, I was a Christian.
And it's not like magic. You said the sinner's prayer. And so they may very well have been following Jesus, you know, this whole time. The sinner's prayer, we know it's not found in the Bible, but it gives us a frame of decision-making, you know?
Commitment.
Yeah. So we could probably talk about that all night. But the point is we need to give them opportunities to say yes to Jesus and understand that it is a decision.
Right.
You know, it's like, you just said yes to Jesus. Do you know how exciting that is? And like, here's what's going to happen as a result of that. And then you can even resource them. So they had some great resources. I took a picture of it just for like some post, Like, I just came to Jesus.
Yeah.
New believers. That's what I'm talking about. New believer resources. And so that helps the discipleship process happen. So knowing who said it, you know, is helpful. Then you can kind of pull them to the next step. So,
yeah. You're going back to one of the things you said. He had mentioned, this is Shane Pruitt, had said the stat that we kind of all throw around, but no one really knows where it comes from or something. Yeah. Like, how many people accepted Christ before the age of 13 or 18 or 30 and things like that. And he said, we just did our own poll. He never said the sample size, or maybe it was at the bottom. Yeah, he did.
It was like 2,600
people. Okay, that does ring a bell.
Yeah, 2,600.
But it was, I think it was 77% was before the age of 18.
I wrote it down, 48. 48 people accept Jesus before 13 years old.
I said 18. I think it was 77
the age of 18. Oh.
So basically your middle school through high school years.
Yeah.
Over two-thirds, right, over three-fourths of students would be accepting of Jesus prior to that, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. And then it was 95%, I believe, was before 30.
Yeah. It had to have been, because after 30, it was only 5%.
So that would be 95.
Look at that. We did it.
Woohoo! All right. Do you have questions for me?
I sure do. They're on my lappy toppy. Okay, so
the Fabulous Four trivia game. Yay.
Yay.
Here we go.
It's time for some fun. Let's play the Fabulous Four trivia game. Yay.
All right. This is fast food trivia.
Why would you suggest that I know anything about fast food?
Well, little known fact, Jeff used to be a secret shopper for Jack in the Box fast food chain.
Yep.
And he would go in and he would have to try the food and write reviews on the service and the quality food.
Greatest job ever.
How much gait did you weigh?
I gained 15 pounds in 3 months.
Wow. Okay. So since you're the fast food expert.
I technically was paid, so I'm a professional.
You're a professional fast food eater.
Okay.
I thought you would like this. But none of them are about Jack in the Box. And I don't think Jack in the Box is nationwide.
Not nationwide.
So, fast food trivia. How many herbs and spices make up the secret blend used in Colonel Sanders Kentucky Fried Chicken?
Total guess. 21.
Nope, 11. The Cracker Barrel is a restaurant chain that started from an old country store located in what state?
Ohio.
Nope. Tennessee.
That's not fast food either.
I know. I didn't think it was either, but whatever.
Wherever you ripped this off of, it was.
What fast food restaurant has a cowboy hat as its logo?
Arby's.
Good. You got one right.
Ding.
What chain claimed, hold the pickles, hold the lettuce, special orders won't upset us?
Oh, I'll just say Burger King.
Yeah. Oh. They probably said it differently. Hold the pickles, hold the lettuce, special orders won't upset us. Something like that, I bet. I ate Burger King once. Made me want to vomit in my mouth. It was disgusting.
I'll just quickly show or tell this story because it may make people never want to go to Burger King again. But this was, I hit up a Burger King. I don't remember the town. It was somewhere going up through California. It was somewhere in the middle of the state. And there was a Burger King. And I remember when I went through the drive-thru, when they were handing me my food, there were fly strips up. By the window with many a flies.
Ew.
And it was like, I shouldn't have ever seen that because I remember eating it and being hungry, but all I could think of was, I'm like, is there flies in
here? Well, here's the thing. If they're on the paper, they're not in your burger.
Well, so, how many more were in the restaurant? Or, I mean, maybe they mistook the cheese for a fly paper. I don't know.
That's not that gross. Flies aren't that gross. A maggot is gross.
Maybe the maggots were in the meat.
I ate a sandwich and there was a worm in it.
Gross.
Because I think it was in a tomato, like it was a deli sandwich with like lettuce, tomato, all this stuff. And my mom picked me up from school and she got me a sandwich from like the grocery store. And I like took a bite and I looked and there was this like worm wiggling. I'm like, oh my gosh. For the longest time, I like could not eat subs.
Yeah, that's gross.
It's really gross.
I think your stomach acid would kill it, but still, the idea is disgusting.
Worms are grosser than flies.
True. You win. So don't eat anything, anybody.
Don't eat anything. You can't trust it. All right, let's tell us your gross food story in the comments below. I just trolled.
Yeah, I do have a much worse one. Is this worth telling?
No, let's gross? Just move on.
Okay, yeah. If you want to know, I'll let you know. It's really bad.
Nobody wants to know.
And I went back to that restaurant, which makes it even worse. Ew. Okay, this is the community comment of the day. This is from Steven Schufelt. This is actually, I think, the second time we've Steven read Schufelt. One from Steven. So thank you. But he says, my wife and I have been in youth ministry now for a little over a year and listened to like all of y'all's videos. Thank you so much for these. They give us so much wisdom and lots of ideas.
Woo! Steven, you're welcome.
Yeah, thanks for supporting the channel. I really appreciate you listening and watching and
Mrs.
all that.
And Mrs. Schufelt. Yeah.
Thank you guys both. We hope you guys were able to make it to one of the youth pastor summits. If it's anywhere near where you live, go check it out. It's awesome. And it's not expensive at all. I
and
could
if
not
you
believe
see Matt Workin, Matt Workin, wow. I can't talk about anything.
Hey, it's late.
Zach Workin, yeah. Chad Higgins, yes. Tell them Jeff and Kristen sent you.
The Boy. Youth ministry booster crew. We
they're our friends.
Hang out with them there, and they're awesome people. So, till next time.
Thank you so much for watching and listening. Yeah,
whatever we say at the
see
end.
See you next time. Good night and Godspeed.